Badham, Natalie Anderson, as well as borough engineer Matt Hoopman. Moving forward on the agenda, we have the opportunity for the public to address council. We ask that you state your name and address for the record.
Okay, going across the top, Greg Chestnut, do you have anything?
No comment, thank you.
Okay. Gene Montgomery?
No, I have nothing today, thank you.
Sam Iannucci? Okay, Marta Driscoll?
No comment tonight, thank you.
Okay, Glenn?
Nothing.
Okay, Trish Williams?
No comment tonight.
Okay. Darren Capangi?
No comment.
Okay. Chris?
No.
Okay. Chip Vaughn? Nothing. John Kerwin? You have anything for council? Karen Clancy?
I do not at this time.
Okay. And then I have a 267-844 number. Do you have anything for council?
Hi, it's Beth McKinnon. No, I do not.
Okay. Elizabeth, do you have anything for council? You were still connecting?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Oh, okay. You're on twice. Gotcha. All right, Drew, that's all I have.
I think you missed Tony Irati.
Tony?
Yeah, I have nothing. Thank you.
Oh, there we go. Sorry.
That's okay.
Not used to people showing their faces.
Okay, Larry, thank you. Moving forward on the agenda, we have zoning hearing meeting update. I'd like to hand it off to alternate solicitor Pete Rohana.
He's on mute.
Pete, where's Pete? Unmute.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. At the Hammonesson Bed and Breakfast property. The Jerry Montello had planned to attend, and I was not going to be involved. And then Jerry came down ill that afternoon and called me. So I agreed to attend Zoom hearing, which I did, and the hearing. Some of council might have attended and some may have stayed till the end. It was still about 11:30. And there's another hearing scheduled for December 15th. So the update is basically what the proposal is to put a residence of 13 elderly people, presumably people that could function mostly on their own, just need some help on the property. They have two cottages that they would be planning to use as well as the main house. And they had the current owner, Glenn Mon, testify. They had the applicant, a lady named Keona Purry. She's one of the co-partners of the company. And they had a expert witness attorney out of Boulder, Colorado, testify about the Fair Housing Act, Amendment Act. Because these people are classified as disabled because they do need some help with some daily activities. And by being classified disabled, they do come under the Federal Fair Housing Act Amendment, which gives certain protections to organizations that operate homes like this. So even though they have more than two unrelated people, which our zoning ordinance says is what a family may be in addition to a biological family, they have protections from federal the federal law and cases that have come out that have allowed more than two, of course. So they're looking for 13. Whether they should have 13 is a point of contention. The neighbors in that community have an attorney representing them. And some of the neighbors themselves entered appearances. The second hearing is December 15th. And with counsel's permission, I will just continue and attend that hearing since I went to the first one. I spoke to Jerry about it, and he was fine with that type of follow-up. I think I've talked to Rich Jensen about some sewer issues, water issues, fire access issues. And Rich is doing some homework and going to get back to me in a day or two. So it may be that we would ask Rich Jensen to come and testify and raise some of these issues that might limit their number of occupants and also might require some more improvements on the property that they're not planning right offhand. So I think that's the approach that we are taking at this point. So I'm open to any questions or things.
Okay, any questions for Pete? Any council members have a question for Pete? Okay, with that being said, Pete, yes, please attend the next meeting. We're interested in seeing what further testimony is given.
Yeah, Mr. President, it's Jerry Montel. I just want to thank Pete for helping me out there, on a QT. I gave him a little notice. He wasn't, he didn't have all the documentation, but he did, attend in my stead, and I appreciate his efforts in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete.
Can I have authority if I need Rich Jensen to testify to have him attend?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, moving forward on the agenda, we have item number 5, snow removal bid award.
So, Mr. President, it's Jerry Montella. I do have the bid form in front of me. As you will recall, there was one bid. It was from Moore Construction Services, Inc., 139 Schoolhouse Lane, Glen Mills, PA, 19342. The price per ton of salt was $120, and the rate per hour is $120. I did look over the I know Matt's not on tonight, but I did look over the bid form and all their information. They do meet the insurance company liability insurance coverage of amount of coverage would be $1 million in occurrence. They did provide a certificate of liability insurance, including the borough of Chester Heights and its elected and appointed officials as additional insureds. And they did provide the necessary documentation pursuant to the bid specifications. As you know, we did compare this bid with some others in the past, and it seemed to be within the scope of, reason. So with that, I guess I would ask council to approve a motion to award the snow and ice removal for a one-year period beginning in December through April 30th and award the contract to Moore Construction Services, Inc.
Sorry, Jerry, what was the end date on that?
It would be from December, I believe, the 7th, which would be the next, meeting, to April 30th, 2021. We typically go to the end of April.
Okay, so it's just one, not even 1 year.
It's a kind of a 2020-2021. And then we would pick it up again sometime in the fall of 2021.
Okay, Jerry, I'll make that motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, the floor is open for discussion. With no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion is approved.
And then, Mr. President, I would also ask counsel to authorize me to prepare the necessary contract between Moore Construction Services, Inc., and also the borough. In this contract, it sets forth all the necessities for entering into the services agreement. It will, I'll have attached the trucks and the equipment that they need to provide to the borough, certainly with the language that they're supposed to get a hold of the roadmaster and make sure that they give the borough priority over the services. And then it also has a map of the borough roads. So I would ask that I be authorized to prepare that and send it to them and then have that executed by them for presentation to borough council.
I will make that motion also. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
I'll second.
The floor is open for discussion. With no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Up next on the agenda, we have the stray dog contract. Jerry, is that what you want to speak to? Or
yes, I can speak to that, maybe Councilwoman Lim as well. So I was asked to draft a stray dog contract between the borough and Alan Strickler. I prepared that and then sent a draft to Mr. Strickler. There was one minor revision to that, and Mr. Strickler did agree to the content of the draft contract. It's a one-year contract. It would start beginning January 1st, 2021 to December 31st, 2021. It sets forth all of the rates that he proposed, and it's essentially a one-year contract. At the end of 2021, Burr would then revisit it and presumably enter into another contract with Mr. Strickler if that's what the council wanted to do. I don't know if has it been distributed to council by any chance?
Yes.
Okay. So I would ask that council approve the contract in its form. It's my understanding that once council approves the contract in its form, that Mr. Strickler would come into the borough, sign it, execute it, and then the borough would sign off on it and execute it. I would ask that at that point, council would also authorize me to notify the SPCA formally to terminate that their contract.
Jerry, I will call for that motion. Is that two motions, Jerry, or one?
It's actually two motions, one to adopt the contract and have Mr. Strickler execute it, and then the second would be to authorize me to formally notify the SPCA about terminating its current contract.
Okay, I'll make the first motion to adopt a new stray dog contract with Alan Strickler.
I'll second it.
The floor is open for discussion. With no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion is approved. And then secondly, I call for a motion to allow the borough solicitor
To notify the SPCA and terminate its current contract by the end of December.
Yes, correct. Is there a motion?
I'll make the motion.
I'll make the motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
The floor is open for discussion.
And just to be clear, this includes a cancellation fee?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
And that fee was in the amount of how much, Laura?
They gave us the cancellation fee October 31st of $5,064.70. I spoke to them this morning and they reconfirmed that price. But I want to go ahead and just make it clear that we're going to finalize it and get the final bill at the end of December. And technically they could add the $273 for November and December. So I'd recommend that we say not to exceed $6,000. just in case they want to go ahead and do the last 2 months, which by contract we would be obligated to pay if they wanted to bill that.
Okay, so I will amend that motion to have the amount not to exceed $6,000.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, the floor is still open for discussion. With no more discussion, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion is approved. Jerry, thank you for that. Laura, thank you for that also. Okay, moving forward on the agenda, item number 7, Zoning Hearing Board Letter of Resignation. I have in front of me a letter of resignation from Zoning Hearing Board member Cynthia A. McNicholas. It is dated November 16th, 2020. It is addressed to Fred Hamill, Chair of the Zoning Hearing Board, and that letter reads as follows. Dear Fred, I am writing to submit my resignation from the Zoning Hearing Board effective December 31st, 2020. I've truly enjoyed meeting and working with the other members of the board. This action is being taken simply because of the increased burdens of work connected with my private practice, as well as my work with the Orphans Court of Delaware County. I find it necessary to opt out of some extracurricular activities that I once enjoyed. Please convey my appreciation to the other board members for making me feel welcome. Thank you. Very truly yours, Cynthia A. McNicholas. I want to thank Ms. McNicholas for her service to the borough. I believe she was on the Zoning Hearing Board. Jerry, can you help me with that? Or Sue Timmons? Has it been more than 15 years, do we know?
Cynthia, I would say it was close to 7 years. But okay. I will find that out in email tomorrow.
Great. I thank her for her service to the borough. And with that being said, there is a vacancy on the Zoning Hearing Board. I would ask that any interested residents send a letter of interest to the borough as well as a resume. We have a 2-week period, I believe, before our December 7th, I think it is, regular council meeting. At that point, we can ask for a nomination to fill that position. Okay, moving forward on the agenda, item number 8.
Are we going to post something on the website about that?
We are. I'll have Sue post it tomorrow.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, up on the agenda next is item number 8, spotted lantern fly update.
Okay. Sue, yeah. So I just wanted to let everyone know that I hosted a visit by the USA on Friday, November 20th from 9 in the morning until noon. And Dave Ferkser was scheduled to attend, but he had a child care issue and was not able to join us. I met with two representatives of the USDA. One was Nancy Artis, and there was a fellow with her named Peter. I can't find his card, but together, the goal of the visit was to identify Trees of Heaven, which is the host tree for the spotted lanternfly, and to see how infested the borough is with this particular tree. We visited Darlington Woods, and we went through all of Darlington Woods, and we only found one tree. However, it was a very large one. And I let Jordan Goldberg know where it was. I sent him a picture, and he said he was going to cut it down. But I learned something very interesting about these trees. You're only supposed to cut them down in the summer because they can, if you cut down one, they can grow more trees, and they're at their weakest in the summer. So I told him that the best time to do it was in the middle of summer. We also visited Fred Wood's property. I don't know, Fred, if you wanted to comment on that visit. You're on mute. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to comment. Yeah, it's a pretty big property, so we didn't really identify all the trees, but I do have quite a few of the Atlantis trees. Some of them are I plan to bring down as part of a repurposing of the farm in the next couple of years. It's part of my conservation plan that I also, working with the USDA, have put together. And it's also been approved by, or at least the plan has been given to the Natural Lands, who owns the agricultural easement on the property. The answer is I do have quite a few Atlantis trees, and they will be coming down in the next 2 years.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things that we learned at Fred's property is that the ailanthus tree is very, let me pick the right words. Bees are very much attracted to the nectar produced by the tree. So it's kind of a catch 22 there, because Fred has beekeepers on his property or near his property. So that was a learning. We found 7 trees on Walnut Hill Boulevard. I'm going to have to ask Matt for some help, because remember the issues that we had with who takes care of what area along Walnut Hill Boulevard? I don't know whose property those trees are on, but we did mark them with a yellow dot. Madison, we identified about a dozen trees and like about 3 different areas in the development. We went through the whole thing. There were no trees of heaven in the borough park, so we don't have to worry about that. However, I did ask them to visit St. Thomas. I had to leave for a conference call, but there is a huge infested tree at St. Thomas and one nearby that's nearly dead. So I spoke with Dave today about what our follow-up. I know we said that we would write a letter, but I actually think with the small number of people that we need to inform, I've already taken care of Darlington Woods. I want to ask Matt for help with Walnut Hill Boulevard. I think Madison, just Dave and I can call Madison and call St. Thomas and let them know our findings. So we just have to set that up. And that's my report. Any questions?
Okay, any questions for Susan? Okay, Susan, thank you.
No problem.
Okay, taking a step back, I'd like to call for a motion to accept the resignation of Cynthia McNicholas from the Zoning Hearing Board.
I'll make the motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
The floor is open for discussion.
Is there a due date for the letter of interest and resume, since I'll be doing the email and the Facebook post?
Yes, I would ask that it's due prior to the regular council meeting in December, so that gives us roughly 2 weeks.
Okay, so want to make it the Friday before, so what is that, the 4th?
The Friday before would be great.
That's too late. I know we're supposed to have information by the Wednesday before, but is the Friday before acceptable to the quorum that's here?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, thank you. That's my only question.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion is approved. Okay, moving forward on the agenda, we have 2021 meeting dates. I'm going to ask for a brief comments on this. Chris Leisner, chairman of the Planning Commission, has not confirmed his date, so I'm going to put this off to our next meeting. But just as we go over our borough council and work session meeting dates, there were 3 dates in question in regards to work sessions, and they were the March, August, and November meetings. In order to keep those meetings the week prior to our regular council meetings, it's being proposed that the March work session be switched to March 29th, the August work session be switched to the 30th, and the November work session to be switched to the 29th of that month. Are there any comments or questions in regards to those dates?
We don't normally have a work session, or we have not traditionally in the last few years had a work session in August. So I guess my question is, unless there's something major on the calendar, August might be a moot point anyway.
It might be, but we can leave it on the schedule, and when we get closer, we can always cancel that with enough time to let the residents and council members know.
And then my other question is about November. Do we prefer to have, again, who knows who's going to be traveling or doing what next Thanksgiving, but would we prefer to have the meeting before or after Thanksgiving? I think that's really the crux of the November date.
I was just looking at that too, and I agree. It should be before Thanksgiving.
So maybe when we regather next or in 2 weeks for our council meeting, the 22nd, that meeting could stay as listed.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Okay.
And I have no comment one way or the other about March.
Okay. All right, very good. Once we confirm with Chris Leisner, we can approve these dates at the regular council meeting in December.
Thank you.
Okay, moving forward on the agenda, we have proposed budgets, item number 10. Mayor Wood, could I pass that to you or Councilperson Lim?
Yeah, so thank you. This is Laura. So we have some updates, and I apologize, I'm reading my notes here. I just want to make sure I get it right. So the budget hearing is scheduled, the budgets, because it's four budgets, the hearing is scheduled for December 7th. One of our, the things that's outlier for us is the Arbor Square assessment appeal. It should be available to us by November 30th. And that has a ripple effect to our property taxes and our fire tax. So we're anxious to get that in so we can do a better job providing good numbers there. And the last thing is that if anybody has any comments, questions regarding the budget that has been posted online, we would appreciate those comments. And could you please email them to the Finance Committee? That'd be to Mayor Wood, myself, or Sue Timmons. And we'll take a look at your comments and we'll see if we need to incorporate them into the final budget. And thank you.
Laura, thank you. Any questions on the proposed budgets? Okay, with that being said, moving forward on the agenda, item number 11, audit proposals. Sue, is that something you would like to speak to? Or Laura?
Yeah, I can. Yes, I'm sorry. Let me bring them up. I apologize. I've been having computer issues. That's why I dialed in late. But for the audit proposals, we have four of them. Sue, can you speak to them while I try and bring them up? There's the firehouse audit. I can speak to that one while Sue brings those up, and then she can speak to them. But basically, with us giving the fire company a lot of funds from public taxes, we're really grateful for the fire company. But one of the things that we want to do is we would like to go ahead and have an audit. And one of the proposals is for 2019 and 2020 fire audit. And that estimate, I believe, is $9,000. Sue, can you speak to the rest of it? I'm having issues.
Yes, there's the general fund budget, and that is for $7,600. And then there's the tax collector budget that's for $2,300.
I thought it was 2,900.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to pull them up. I'll get back to you in 1 minute. Sent.
It's $2,900.
I'm sorry, Sue. Susan, can you say that number again? I apologize. I can't hear.
It's $2,900. It was in the email that Sue sent out. The title of it was Work Session Agenda, which may be why you're having a hard time finding it.
Engagement letter.
Yes. Thank you. All right.
General,
yeah, go ahead.
$2,900 for the tax collector and $9,000 for the fire company audit. We don't have, I think that the general fund was $7,400, so it's a couple hundred more, and I forget what the tax collector one, but that seems reasonable. I think this is the first time we've had to pay for a firehouse audit, so that's a big number.
Yeah, so for the firehouse audit, if you go back and you look at the previous budgets, we've actually had around $5,000 budgeted for them, but it was never executed. So we are going, that's why we went out and we reached out to the, and we asked for an estimate for the audit, because we want to conduct an audit in 2021. So that's why originally for 1 year, it was about $5,000, and we asked for a 2-year audit. So that's why it increased to $9,000.
moving forward, are these audits, we're going to, all of the audits, something we're going to do every year?
That's actually a really good question. That's one of the things that we were discussing in the finance committee. And I think the correct answer is we would like to see the results of these audits first and then bring that back to council.
But we do a general fund audit and a tax collector audit every year, don't we, Sue?
Well, for about 7 years, we didn't do a tax collector audit because what they required would be so costly. But the state requires a general fund audit and a liquid fuels state audit every year. And there's no cost associated with the state audit.
So the tax collector audit is something we could look at doing like every other year if we wanted, right?
Yes.
And what about the fire company audit, Laura? Do you think we could do that every other year also?
That, when Fred and I and Sue were talking, we were thinking every other year. But to be honest, we'd like to see how the first results of this audit comes. And see what that looks like before we, you know, put that into stone.
That makes sense.
All right. Do I have a motion to approve the expenditure as so mentioned for the three mentioned audits?
I'll make the motion.
Is there a second?
Do we have to actually pay for it now, or are we
budgeting for it?
Budgeting for it. Yeah. We don't pay until you invoice us.
That's correct.
For this, Jerry or Laura, are you just making mention of this as part of the budget process?
Well, the first part is to accept the letter of engagement, the first part of the motion, and then we'll put it in the 2021 budget under audits. Okay.
So that's really the right way. We'd like to accept the motion of the three engagement letters from the auditor.
Okay. Laura, I will let you make the motion.
Yes, thank you. At this time, I would like to make a motion for the engagement letter for the Chester Heights General Fund, the engagement letter for Chester Heights Fire Company, and for the engagement letter for the Chester Heights Tax Collector for a 2021 audit.
I'll make the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
The floor is open for discussion. With no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed? The motion is approved. Laura, thank you. Sue, thank you. Okay, moving forward on the agenda, just a quick note. I'm going to move up item number 15, public comment period, to be behind the Powell property presentation. And also after the presentation, I'm going to allow council to ask questions. After that, I will allow a 20-minute question period for the public. With the motivation that all these documents will be posted on the borough website tonight, and we will be asking the applicant to come join us again at a future meeting to answer all questions residents might have. I think this will give the residents some time to look over new documents that were presented tonight. So with that being said, counsel for the applicant, Mr. Joe D'Amico, is with us tonight. Joe, the floor is yours.
I represent Lorraine B. Powell, who is the owner of 62.654 acres of land with frontage on Valley Brook Road and Smithford Road, as shown on the plans and exhibits, which I circulated to the borough to circulate to all council members, as well as your professionals. And with me tonight are Glenn Powell, who is the son of the Powells, and Tom Comitta, our land planner of Comitta Associates, and also Jennifer Reach, who did the fiscal impact studies for Tom Comitta's company. I want to thank you for placing this matter on your agenda tonight. As you know, most of the property that is shown on the plans was part of the Powell residence farm for many years, and Calvin Powell, who had lived in Chester Heights Borough for, I guess, 40 years or more, died on June 2nd, 2017. And after Calvin's death, the Powells became aware that members of borough council, at least some of them, were interested in acquiring open space for the borough, and expressed some interest in the Powell property. The Powell's property is a beautiful mixture of wooded area, lowland meadow, a stream, sloping fields, ideal for preserving open countryside, one of the objectives of your PRD ordinance and your comprehensive plan. I've represented the Powells for many years, and after Calvin died, again, they requested that I explore the possibility of a reasonable development of the property, but at the same time preserving most of the property in its natural state. And in reviewing the Chester Heights Borough Zoning Ordinance, I felt that the Planned Residential Development Ordinance provides the perfect legal structure to obtain reasonable development of a residential area and at the same time preserving at least 70% of the property as preserved open space. The Powells retained Tom Comita, one of the area's most respected land planners, to develop a plan for a proposed PRD consisting of clustered single-family carriage homes, and pursuant to Section 185-63 of the PRD ordinance, dedicate over 70% of the property to the borough for preserved open space. Tom Comita and his staff accepted the task and prepared a plan, which consists of 62.6-acre PRD with 52 carriage houses on 13.7 acres, which includes 3.83 acres of community open space, and then 48.2 acres of common open space to be dedicated to the borough, as shown on Exhibits 4 and 5. And the plan meets or exceeds all of the size, density, and open space requirements of the borough's PRD ordinance. The minimum tract size required is 50 acres. The subject is 62.6 acres. The density maximum is 4 units per acre, and the plan provides for 0.83, less than one dwelling unit per acre. The dedicated open space requirement is a minimum of 70%, and provided is 77% to the borough, and in addition, 3.8 acres for the residents of the PRD. The fiscal impact on the school district and availability of public sewer have been a major issue that we had to explore, and we have. And as a result, we've had Tom committed to a fiscal impact assessment. And at the last meeting with you, you requested two additional studies, a by-right plan study, and also a by-right plan fiscal impact study, which have been completed and that have been marked Exhibit 7. And we've done the by-right plan Exhibit 6, and a by-right fiscal impact study, which is Appendix A to Exhibit 7. We also did a fiscal impact study, based on the actual Garnet Valley School District's attendance records of children in townhouses or carriage houses and children in single-family dwelling houses. And that's Exhibit number 8. With regard to sewer, we had Walter Fasler of Bradford Engineering do a sewer feasibility report, which we've submitted to the borough, and public sewer is feasible. And with your permission, Tom Comita is prepared to make a brief presentation of the plans, and Jennifer Wright is prepared to discuss the fiscal impact studies. We sincerely believe that our proposal is a win-win for the owner of the borough. It enables the borough to acquire 48 acres of open space at no cost, and the owner to develop the property at a reasonable density. As previously stated at the January 6, 2020 council meeting, we recognize that the proposed 52-unit PRD will require rezoning to PRD, because under your PRD ordinance, and the PRD is not a type of zoning district as opposed to an overlay district in most ordinances, so that anyone requesting the zoning of PRD, the property has to be rezoned to a PRD status. We're also aware that the one of the requirements is that the comprehensive plan must designate the property for PRD zoning. And the comprehensive plan, as I see it, doesn't designate any place in the borough as PRD, although there are two. And the comprehensive plan states as a goal that the borough should preserve and maintain the rural character and resources of the borough through the preservation of significant undeveloped rural areas. The question is, how do we do it? And I suggest to you that we are giving you an opportunity to do exactly what your comprehensive plan thinks should be done by submitting a plan giving 48 acres of open space to the borough. We respectfully request that you review the exhibits, have Mr. Bootman and Mr. Montella and other township professionals also review the exhibits, and permit us to meet with you at your next meeting or whenever you desire to have us meet with you again. And with that, unless there's any questions of me, I'd call on Tom Committed to make his brief presentation.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So Mr. D'Amico had submitted an exhibits list, and I would just like to briefly summarize them. The exhibit one is my resume, and I am a land planner and landscape architect that I've worked 47 years in Southeast Pennsylvania. I have a Bachelor of Science in Landscape Architecture from Penn State with a minor in Community Development, and I have a Master of Landscape Architecture from Harvard University with a minor in City and Regional Planning. I'm a certified planner, a registered landscape architect. And back in 1991, I actually served briefly as the Chester Heights Borough Planning Consultant, during which I did a couple of evaluation of documents and assistance with some ordinance amendments. Exhibit two is the aerial photograph. Oh, okay. Let's scroll up. There we go. So exhibit two is the aerial photograph that I previously presented at the Borough Council work session in January. And it simply illustrates the outline that are the boundaries of the property. And so let me go next to exhibit three. The next page, which is there are three exhibits in this set, the first of which is the site analysis drawing. And so what we outlined were the wooded areas, the steep slopes, the moderately steep slopes, the lowland meadow area near the creek, places that had limited site distance, mostly because of the road cut of Valley Brook Road, certain access points with good site distance, the plateau area at the top of the hill, and then existing access opportunities. The second, and exhibit four, the next exhibit is titled Sketch Plan. And as Mr. D'Amico pointed out, this plan depicts 52 carriage homes. So 12 of the unit groupings have three homes attached for 36 homes, and eight of them have two attached for 16. So altogether, there are 52 carriage homes. The design of the plan was inspired in large part by the Tremor community in Rose Valley Borough that has the same type of dwelling units. And if you go to the next exhibit five, this exhibit shows on the right side examples of what those Tremor type homes look like, including the top right triplex carriage home, and then again just below it, and then the two illustrations below are the duplex carriage home of different architectural styles. Essentially, the purpose, as Mr. D'Amico pointed out, of the PRD ordinance, which we believe this plan complies with, is to designate open space. And so basically there are two types of open space that are described in the Chester Heights Borough zoning ordinance. Kind of an overall category of open space where the PRD requires 70% and this plan depicts 83%. And then for common open space, both of these terms having definitions to back them up in your zoning ordinance, 50% is required and 77% is provided. So as Mr. D'Amico said, Mr. Montella, Mr. Hootman, others, presumably at a certain point in time, could evaluate the plan to determine the extent to which it does comply with the PRD ordinance. And so that led, after we had prepared Exhibit 5, to the preparation of Exhibit 6, the so-called by right plan. And the idea here was to demonstrate that on the base zoning regulations, which include both the R1 district and the R1 half, in order to comply with those district regulations, according to our evaluation, it might be possible, again, subject to Mr. Hootman's review, Mr. Montella's review, that one could build 23 conventional or by right type units, which, as illustrated on Exhibit 6, would not include any open space. So as a kind of overarching view, I would like to go back to one exhibit. Let's go back to Exhibit 5, the preceding. Thank you. So in terms of the long-term view, the Borough Council has the opportunity to review and evaluate the proposed open space to decide if you would be inclined to accept an offer of a deed of dedication or not. But in any event, the plan is not to build any more than 52 carriage homes that are modeled after Tremor, the units depicted to the right, and more compact with neighborhood greens within the area proposed for the housing. And so the long-term prospect is that open space would be a benefit to Chester Heights Borough in perpetuity. And that would be Borough Council's choice whether you would want to accept an offer of a deed of dedication of the open space or whether the open space would just be not owned and maintained by the borough. I'm getting way ahead, but I just want to say that the interpretation and site analysis did not lead us to think that four dwelling units per acre would fit on this ground. We exceeded the open space. We did not encroach on the slopes. We did not encroach in the floodplain. And try to generate as much open space as possible for a total of 83% of the area. So that's pretty much the summary. I know with Mr. Brahms, a suggestion that item 15 would move up after. I'd be happy to answer any questions. But at your January 6, 2020 work session, you asked if we could circle back to the Garnet Valley School District to double check, triple check on the number of school age children and to look at everything again. And Jennifer writes from TCA, we'll be able to describe the next two exhibits, which are Exhibit 7 and Exhibit 8. Exhibit 7 was prepared back in April 2019, and then it was updated in March of 2020. But as a result of getting feedback from the Garnet Valley School District and having prepared the by-right plan, Jennifer updated everything to November 19 of this year, which is what Exhibit 8 are. So Jennifer, if you're there and you could summarize Exhibits 7 and 8, that would be great.
I am definitely here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, Jennifer.
Okay. Very good. So as Tom said, the Exhibit 7 is based on, is a fiscal impact assessment that shows, basically goes through, you know, age children that would be generated by each of the developments, and then it goes through and it basically concluded using regionally accepted multipliers, basically concluded that there would be approximately 15 school age children generated by the 52 carriage units. Going through the estimated revenues based on the market and assessed values, and then the cost to Garnet Valley School District to educate each of those children, we estimated that there would be an annual net revenue to the school district of $230,000 per year. And this is shown at the bottom of page A4 on Exhibit 7. Now, once the board requested the information regarding the impacts of a by-right plan, so this is shown in Appendix A of Exhibit 7. The by-right plan proposes the 23 single-family units. Using those same regionally accepted multipliers, we estimated that this would generate 25 school-age children. Going through the calculations again of market value, estimated market value, and assessed value, and then coming up with a net calculation, we estimated this would result in a loss of a little over $200,000 to the Garnet Valley School District. And this conclusion is shown there on the last page of Exhibit 7. Now, again, after the board requested that we use multipliers that were derived a little closer to home, kind of ground them a little bit more, we did reach out to the Garnet Valley School District and received the numbers that they were used in the last district enrollment study. These came from Chris Wilson out of the business office. And so whereas the previous report in Exhibit 7 used a multiplier of 1.06 school-age children for each single-family detached unit and a 0.28 school-age children for each attached unit, the Garnet Valley School District demographic study came up. They gave us direct numbers of 0.75 school age children for each single family detached dwelling, and that was three or four bedrooms, and a 0.36 for each attached unit in the borough, or actually in the school district, So if we jump ahead to Exhibit 8, this is where we integrate those multipliers as we calculate the number of school-age children. And so the proposed carriage home development would be estimated to generate 19 school-age children. This is on page 2. and we would estimate 18 school-age children for the by right plan. And so the multiplier for the attached unit actually went up a little bit using the school district numbers, and the multiplier for the single family development went down for each of the single detached units. And so we kind of met in the middle with 19 for the townhouse, for the carriage units, and 18 for the single families in terms of school-age children. Now, as we move ahead and looking at the actual revenues generated versus expenses to educate those children, the calculations result in a positive impact again to the Great Valley School District with a net annual revenue of $150,000 per year for the proposed development. And this is shown at the top of page 5. Meanwhile, the by right plan, which is shown at the top of page 7, is estimated to result in a net loss of just over $58,000 per year. I also want to point out there on page 7, under the conclusion, there's sub bullet number 3. There's a mistake where it references 15 school age children. Basically, that bullet is just saying that regardless of the number of estimated school-age children, we are assuming that all of them would attend Garnet Valley School District, when we know, just to take a conservative estimate, because we know there's usually a certain percentage that would attend private school, but for purposes here, we assume that all of them would attend the public school system. And so I think that kind of boils down the two reports. I'm happy to take any questions on how we got there, but just so we do understand that the numbers did come directly from, for school age children, did come directly from the school district.
I have a question, but are we going to hold them to the end?
Jennifer, are you finished your presentation?
I am, yes.
Okay, so
I just wanted to mention there are two other exhibits in our presentation. Exhibits 9 and 10 are illustrative of the building type that is proposed as either duplex or triplex units. And it was the value of these units that Jennifer used in her fiscal impact study for the carriage homes. That's the last part of our presentation.
Just to clarify one thing, Jennifer, that number 15 on your last exhibit 8 should really be stricken. That was meant to say all, as you indicated, so that was a typo in the report or should not have been in the report.
The number 15 is a typo. It should just say all of the children, whether it's the 18 for the single family or the 19 for the carriage homes. All of those children are assumed to attend Garnet Valley. So thank you for the correction.
Okay, at this point, I will open up questions to Borough Council first. Jennifer, is it possible to have that revised, that last revision you spoke of?
Absolutely.
Okay. So at this point, I'm going to open up questions to the Borough Council members. After that, we will have a 20 to 30 minute question period for residents. And again, these documents will be posted on the Borough website for residents to look over at their convenience, and we can reconvene at an agreed upon date for those questions that they might have to be answered. So do I have any Borough Council members who have any questions? Susan, I think you had a question.
I do. So Jennifer, these values, the 0.28 and the 0.36, am I to understand that means number of school-age children per one townhome?
Correct. So the 0.28 was a multiplier that came out of a Montgomery County Planning Commission study done in the mid-2000s that came up with the school-age children per dwelling type. So that was a 0.28. And then when we reached out to Garnet Valley School District, Mr. Wilson said the last demographic study estimated 0.36 school-age children per townhouse or attached dwelling type.
So, in other words, the denominator is the population of townhomes in a given school, in the school district, correct?
Correct.
Do you know if they included 55 plus townhome communities in that denominator?
I do not. I didn't look over the entire demographic study, so I don't know how. I would assume not, but I could certainly double check on that.
Because that would make that number lower than it truly is. That's why we said Brookfield would be a good comparable in our borough as far as how many school age children do we have per townhome. If the 55 plus communities are in there, that needs to be adjusted for.
Okay. Noted.
Okay, Susan, any further questions?
No, that's all I have.
Jennifer, I take you will look into that and follow up?
I will, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any other borough council members with questions at this time?
I just want to be clear, Jennifer, question. The bold at top says the Garnet Valley School District, but the notes say Great Valley School District 2019. Is that Great Valley and Malvern, or is that Garnet Valley and Edit?
That is a typo as well, and it is Garnet Valley.
Okay, just making sure. Thank you.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, any further questions from council members? Okay, at this time, Larry, could we open this up to residents who are attending the meeting tonight?
Larry's muted.
Larry's muted. On purpose or by mistake?
Might have been of both.
Okay.
Greg.
Yes, thank you. Greg Chestnut, 317 Willits Way. I have several comments and questions. Can we go back to Exhibit 3, please?
Exhibit 3.
So on Exhibit 3, I live in the development just to the bottom left of this entire piece. So basically where that legend is on the bottom left corner is where the Rockford Estates development is. We are 24 houses in Chester Heights Borough and in Concord Township. A couple things. I don't want to speak for the whole group, but I know that there are several people that would be opposed to the development in principle. A couple specific points, though. Our association back in 2012 commissioned a boundary survey by Hoopman and Associates. That survey showed that there was no property on the Chester Creek, on our side of the Chester Creek, that was owned by the Powell property. So our association will dispute drawings like this that show ownership of the of any property on the southwest side of Chester Creek. Also, if you look at the areas on this picture, the pink area and the orange area, those are not just hilly, but those are in floodplain. I have pictures as recently as January of this year of that entire area underwater. So I would dispute the fact that that land is actually buildable anyway, and therefore would say it's not a fair trade to trade off denser housing for land that can't be built on anyway. That's obviously a question for an engineer to answer, but I would dispute the way the land is being characterized there. Another point is that all these properties that are together here are currently under Act 319 Clean and Green, which is a property tax abatement program run by the state. If these properties transfer out of that farm abatement program, there will be back taxes due, I think about 6 or 7 years worth of back taxes due to the county, to the municipality, and to the school district. So I think that should be kept in mind as we're talking through this. Full disclosure, next point, I'm on the Garnet Valley School Board. I would expect that the best way to answer any questions about the study on school district is to actually send it over to Chris Wilson and people within the school to make their comments. I agree with Ms. Clark that probably the best thing to compare this to will be Brookfield. And I believe the district's experience with Brookfield is it's had much higher density of students than was expected originally. And that's the shift we've seen in the last several years when you had these dense developments. They're getting a lot more younger children in their school-age children. So I think that it's probably the best thing to do is compare it to Brookfield or a similar development like that.
And then finally, just a question. When would these exhibits be posted out for the website? Is that within the next week or so?
That would be up to Sue Timmons.
I think the plan is tonight.
Thank you.
Well, Greg, I would ask that those revisions be made that we spoke of.
Yep.
And then I would think those revisions could be sent to the borough by tomorrow, possibly, or the next day, and put them up right away.
Great. Thank you.
Is that all you have, Greg?
That's enough. Thank you.
That's enough. Okay. I lost where I was. Jean Marie, or Jean, do you have any?
No, I don't have anything. Thanks. Okay.
All right. Tony, do you have anything?
No, not at this time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Mack, do you have anything?
Hi, Beth McKinnon, 333 Willits Way, neighbors with the Chestnuts. My question is concerning the original Powell house and barn. Will anything be done with that, or is that going to be kept the same? They have renters in there now. Any plans to do anything with the house?
Well, I think the question would be for Joe. Joe, if the borough, if the borough were to take this in dedication, if this is approved, obviously that wouldn't be an issue. If the borough declined this offer and this project was able to go forward, what would the answer to that question be, I guess?
Well, the proposal is to include the house and barn as part of the dedication to the borough because it's on the open space land. If the borough does not want the land and the property were developed, it would be carved out as the area of the house and barn would be carved out as a single family dwelling to be sold.
So am I to understand that the borough either fixes, repairs, updates, and does something with that house, the borough becomes a landlord and keeps the tenants, or it gets sold and then there is a private property in the middle of open space that belongs to the borough? Those are the three options as I'm understanding them right now.
Again, the first option is that it go to the borough as part of the open space and as a use that the borough as a perhaps a borough building.
Okay, so that's the fix it up, do something with it, take it over option.
Yes.
Or Gina, one of the things is that the borough would opt to remove the home and the barn for safety reasons.
Yes, once all of that land is given to the borough is free to do whatever it wants. And if it wants to use the building, it can be used. If they don't want to use it, it could be torn down.
I know that the state government, the federal government, and the county government all have properties on their land that they rent out to individuals as single family homes. Do we know, do any municipalities do that? Is that something that can be done? Is that an option that we could even consider?
Well, I do know that in Ridley Creek State Park, when that land was taken over by the state from the Hinkson family, they elected to keep some of the single family dwellings that are on that property and they rent them out. As single-family dwellings.
This is Jerry Montella. There are municipalities that do rent private properties out. I believe it's been done in Concord Township, I'm aware of, and also I believe maybe Marple Newtown. But there are municipalities that do rent properties.
Yeah, this is
may I say, and I forgot, in Middletown Township, where I'm solicitor, when we bought the Smedley tract on Rose Tree Road, There are tenants in one of the houses on the now Middletown Township owned open space. So we have a tenant in one of the houses.
Yeah, this is Tom Kmita. In 1973, Valley Creek Park was created in East Whiteland Township next to what is now the Great Valley Corporate Center. And the old house on that property since 1973 has been occupied by a tenant who, in exchange for rent, cuts the grass, plants flowers, prunes the shrubs, and so forth. So the way East Whiteland has structured it at Valley Creek Park on Route 29 in Malvern, Pennsylvania, is in that way. They just wanted to defer the cost of maintenance, so that's what they did in exchange for occupancy of the house.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Marta, do you have anything?
No, I think Greg covered most of my questions. Thank you.
Okay. Chip Vaughn? Chip, do you have anything for Borough Council regarding this presentation?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Hey, Fred, Lord Larry, was Beth McKinnon done? I know she asked the one question.
I don't know. Beth, do you have another question?
Thanks, Susan. I am done. That was my only question.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Appreciate it, though. Yep. That's okay.
Make sure we didn't miss anybody.
Yep. Bill Burke, do you have anything for Burke? Comment?
Bill Burke, 299 Dalybrook. We live on the northeast quadrant of this Exhibit 3 that has the access drive to it. Right now, it is gravel. Who's going to have – is that going to be changed to macadam? Is it going to be – who's going to take care of that if this goes through?
So on the next exhibit, in Exhibit 4, if we could go scroll down by one exhibit, there is a note that indicates emergency access, and that would then be maintained by whoever owns the land on which the 52 carriage homes sit, and that same emergency access is noted on the next page, but the principal access is proposed along Smith Bridge Road. And in order to do that, there would have to be a reconfigured driveway because the geometry is not quite right.
Okay, so how is the access going to work for the businesses back there? Because currently it is that emergency access is used for those businesses.
Well, I could let Glenn Powell talk about what the disposition of the businesses would be. I'm not sure about whether they continue or not, so I don't know.
Okay, and then one last one is at the back end of the houses towards the backside of my house. Would there be a chance to have privacy trees or something put up along that backside?
Yes. In the drawing, we attempted to show a very conceptual illustration for landscaping, but the idea was to have some berming and landscaping collectively, except to get into the emergency access lane.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's all I got. Thank you.
All right. I don't see everybody because I'm sharing my screen. So if there's anybody else that would like to make a comment, can you please unmute yourself? And
hi, this is Tony Irati. I just had a follow-up some of the questions that came in. So I presume that Chester Heights has no properties that they rent out now. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So this would be new to the borough.
They did at one time. They had the schoolhouse at the corner of Llewellyn and Valleybrook that they owned and rented out.
Okay.
And then during some period of council, they decided to sell to an individual.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Anybody else on the Zoom call that has comments? All right, Drew, back to you.
Okay, Joe, thank you. Tom, thank you. Jennifer, thank you. If we could have those couple items revised on those documents, we'd be able to post these on the borough website. It'll give our residents some time to go over these, review them, digest them at their own convenience. And when we agree to convene again, I think they might have some more specific questions based on the items presented tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for coming in tonight. Okay. Moving forward on the agenda, we have, is there any further additional public comment on anything else unrelated to this presentation?
Yes, this is Greg Chestnut, 317 Willits Way, on the topic of the audit for the fire company. The way it works for the library is that it does a full audit every 3 years, and then the other 2 years do what's called a review, which is cheaper and easier. So you may want to think about something like that. It is quite a bit cheaper just to do that review. And secondly, when the library does its audit, it pays for its own audit. I'm not quite sure why the borough is the client here for the audit and not the fire company itself.
That's a good question. Laura, do we know why that is, or could we look into that?
The rationale was because we give the fire company about $178,000 a year. Some of that $178,000 is passed through from fire tax, and some of it is from the state. The majority of it is from public funds that the borough collects through public taxes, and the borough gives the fire company because throughout the years, the fire company has requested the funds, and we have obliged them. So we have opted to take on the recommendation that we've received for the last couple of years and conduct an audit. As to them paying it versus us paying for it is because it's public funds, and we want to make sure that the public funds are being used appropriately. So we brought in and we requested an auditor to do the auction or do the audit.
Yeah, I totally agree with doing the audit. It just doesn't sound right that the fire company is not the client here. So like I said, when the library does it, the library pays for it, once again, with taxpayer money in some cases, because you know the library is supported by the townships and by the state.
We would like our picked auditor to audit them. So the fire company to pick their own auditor and to lead the audit, it's just not a good lens. It's not a good look. So it's public funds that we want to make sure are being obligated and used appropriately, because we are council. We're beholden to the public to make sure that those funds are used appropriately.
Okay.
So it behooves us to pick the auditor and identify what we'd like the auditor to look at.
Okay.
Maybe going forward.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Maybe going forward, I understand what you're saying, but for this particular one, that's why we brought in an auditor, and this is what we're asking them, and we're asking them to look at particular things.
Okay, so they're only auditing the borough's money, not the fire company's full budget. Is that right?
They're actually going to be looking at a couple things. I'd have to go back and look at the audit. They're going to be looking at... Sue, if you're on, I know that you and I had talked about it with Cindy, the auditor. Can you kind of give a summary of all the items she's going to be looking at?
Yeah, the money, the contribution from the general fund and the local service tax, which is approximately $50,000 a year. And
one of the things that Sam wanted also us to look at for the auditor to look at, because we had asked Sam, Iannucci, was there anything that he was interested in? And So it's a collaborative effort of things that we want to look at. One of them was their billing procedures and verification of billing and how the automatic billing is being conducted. I'm trying to think of some other things. I have to go back and look at her estimate for all the specifics, but there's lots of different areas that the auditor is going to be looking at for the last 2 years.
Okay. Yeah, and thank you for doing that. I think it's a great idea.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have anyone else who wishes to question Borough or make a comment? Okay. With that moving forward, do we have any new business tonight? Do we have any old business tonight?
I'll just ask again about the sewer map. Any update on that?
I have a phone call into Mike Sciocco Jr. from late last week. I'd gotten back to him, I guess, the previous week, or maybe it was 2 weeks prior to that. He was instructed on the items that we had requested he include. So I will follow up with him tomorrow to see what the status of that is. It sounds like it should be forthcoming shortly, but I will check on that tomorrow with him.
Thank you.
Okay, with no other old business, do I have a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting?
I'll make the motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion is approved. Larry, thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Everybody, good night. Have a good night and a good holiday.
Thank you, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Good night.
Good night.
Night.